Hello, and welcome to IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast, brought to you by Learning Essentials. Learning Essentials offers special education-based tutoring in your home by state-certified educators with advanced degrees in all areas of special education. IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast brings professionals together to educate and empower families navigating special education needs in the IEP process.
Welcome to IEP Essentials Podcast, the pod that offers all things special ed. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a follow. In this episode of IEP Essentials, we are talking with Mike McLeod about ADHD, executive function, and the language connection. Mike McLeod is an ASHA certified speech language pathologist and executive function ADHD specialist. Mike focuses on the unique and innovative skills and internal language while constructing interpersonal relationships and meaningful varied experiences for students. The evidence-based Grow Now model utilizes a holistic approach towards decreasing prompt dependency and strengthening independence through the lens of the academic, social, and emotional methodology. Mike is the owner of Grow Now Therapy Services, a specialized private practice in Philadelphia. He partners with several public and private schools to assist them in developing their executive function programming by training staff and working directly with students. Michael has presented nationwide and internationally, training families and professionals on his unique Grow Now treatment model for fostering executive function and resiliency. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. I cannot wait to dive into this conversation and just get some tips from you on how we can support our kiddos in that realm of ADHD, executive function, with that language connection. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's definitely a privilege to be here. I think the podcast that you do and the work that you do is incredibly important and valuable to families and parents out there. The IEP process can be quite daunting for families. So I think this is a great resource for everyone out there.
Wonderful. So talk to us about internal language and self-directed talk.
Sure, absolutely. So the internal language is a specific model I've created for treatment of developing and strengthening executive functioning skills. So it's a unique approach, and it's, you know, a piece of the puzzle towards the entire therapeutic team of ADHD and executive functioning, something a speech and language pathologist can do, or someone just trained within this specific program. So internal language is the two foundational skills of executive functioning. Number one is nonverbal working memory, also known as the visual imagery system of the brain. And this is the foundation of all executive functions. All executive functioning and the executive functions that you've heard of, time management, organization, task initiation, task completion, everything starts with nonverbal working memory. Visual imagery is the foundation of all executive functions. And then there's verbal working memory, which is the self-directed talk system, the self-talk system. So internal language are those two skills combined, visual imagery and self-talk. And internal language is when both of these systems are strengthened and they work together in harmony. First, the pictures, or what I refer to with my students as mental movies, and then self-talk, which is what I refer to as the brain coach and the ability to have an internal dialogue. So first, with visual imagery and nonverbal working memory, these are really two separate things. Number one is the ability to re-image the relevant past and learn from past experiences and apply it to the present. And the visual imagery, the human visual imagery system, is so strong, it allows us to really re-experience past events. And we can use all of our senses. So we can rehear past, we can rehear the sounds, re-smell the smells, re-see the sights, re-feel the feels. We can really, based on the pictures we hold in mind, we can really go back in time and re-experience things and use those experiences to help us make healthy and positive choices in the present moment. And then the number one skill with nonverbal working memory that parents tend to see is future thinking skills. and the ability to forecast yourself into the future. So this is the ability to use your visual imagery, use your mental movies to see yourself in a different time and space completing non-preferred tasks. So future thinking is the foundation of planning, prioritizing, and problem solving. So you see yourself completing non-preferred tasks, which allows you to plan backwards so you can execute forward. So go backwards. And that's from some of the great work of Sarah Ward, a fellow speech and language pathologist. And then verbal working memory is the ability to have an internal conversation, an internal dialogue. A lot of kids with ADHD and executive function delays really don't talk to themselves very much. You know, they'll think about their favorite YouTube videos, their favorite video games, things like that. But, you know, people with strong executive functioning are in constant conversation with their brains. You know, before they even get out of bed in the morning, they're talking to their brains. They're visualizing of what they have to do to drink their coffee and brush their teeth and get out the door on time. Kids who don't visualize to themselves and don't talk to themselves are just constantly looking for instant gratification wherever they go. And nothing that they're doing in the present moment is to help them 10 minutes down the road, an hour down the road, a day down the road. So both visual imagery and self-talk are the foundation of all executive functions. And that's what comprises internal language.
So how does the internal dialogue help children with ADHD and executive function delays?
So with self-directed talk, individuals with ADHD and executive functioning have great difficulty starting non-preferred tasks, persisting through them, and completing them. They have a very strong fight or flight response to challenge, to a learning curve, to delayed gratification. It's very hard for them to do something that is challenging, that is new, that is outside of their comfort zone, which tends to be screens, video games, and instant gratification and things like that. So it's very hard for them to persist through non-preferred tasks to completion, especially when there's no direct gratification when working on these tasks. So the ability to talk to themselves and have an internal dialogue is really them being able to coach themselves. It's about building an internal coach internally, so you're not dependent on the world around you and the adults around you. So that's really the prompt dependence, is when you are so reliant on parent reminders, teacher reminders, IEP prompts, IEP accommodations, 504 accommodations. You're reliant on the world around you to keep you on task and to complete tasks. We need the external to be internal so you can persist through these inevitable tasks of life, whether it's school, career, social, home, that are not instantly gratifying.
So have you worked, so you talk about starting, persisting, and completing tasks with that internal dialogue. Students that you work with that are impacted with executive functioning and or ADHD, do they all start with the challenge of starting the task, or have you found kids that can start it but then don't persist in order to complete the task? Like, is there a spectrum, or do they typically start with the frustration of actually even getting started with it?
Oh yeah, when it comes to ADHD and executive functioning, it is always a spectrum. So you are never going to meet two kids who are exactly the same. There's always varying degrees.
Which I think is true in life, right?
You got, exactly. Every single kid has their own unique gifts, strengths, needs, likes, dislikes. So it's really just about getting, you know, rapport is of the utmost importance, especially when it comes to ADHD and executive functioning. Is one of the number one parent concerns when parents call me is, how the heck am I going to get my kid to come to your sessions? How am I going to get the buy-in? He thinks nothing's wrong. All he wants to do is be in front of screens. There's no way I'm going to get him to commit to therapy. And that's really something that I think a lot of speech pathologists, because of course I'm very biased as a speech pathologist, but I think a lot of therapists in general really specialize in is getting that internal buy-in and building rapport. I'm also trained in Stanley Greenspan's DIR floor time model, which is really meant for a lot of younger kids. But I'm able to use a lot of those techniques with my teenagers and college-age students and middle school students to really build rapport and build engagement. And, you know, I've had parents say to me, there's no way I'm going to get your kid to agree to come to the sessions. And then after the first session, they're asking for more sessions because you show them that, you know, okay, these are internal independent skills that are going to help you get your parents off your back, You're not going to be so reliant. You're going to have more time for what you want, less arguing, less fighting, less time spent on work. Your life is more productive. And getting that internal buy-in, it's all based on relationships. Everything is relationship-based. Was that the original question? I'm kind of on a tangent.
But no, it's definitely true. I think for sure, you know, you have to have that buy-in. You have to have that rapport building. Just even from my standpoint, you know, with the special education lens, used to be in schools and now with Learning Essentials, but you definitely need that buy-in and that rapport for students to feel connected, to feel heard, to feel valued. And then they realize the yep. skills that you're teaching are really making their life easier. And it's not adding one more thing to their list for that.
Yeah. Exactly. And just to add to that, like a lot of parents will say like, oh, I'm signing up for therapy. I'm signing up for coaching. And these kids have all of these preconceived notions of what therapy is, of what coaching is, of what executive functioning is. You know, they think they're going to come into a room and sit on a couch and have to do worksheets with someone who's like 95 years old and talk about their feelings and these sorts of things. So it's all about reframing it and redefining it for them and making it engaging. You know, none of the executive functioning work I do is sitting at a desk with a kid doing worksheets or, you know, tracking data and that crazy stuff. You know, it's really getting to know the child and giving them the skills they need. So after they leave my office, you start to see progress. It's all about progress outside of the session.
Exactly. And you want to have that that they feel that they can take what they've learned in their sessions and start to independently employ them when they're in real life settings, whether it's in the classroom or outside of the classroom. And so you talked about that visual component, that internal component. How do you as the therapist measure if they're building that skill base?
That's a great question.
Like as a parent, how would I know that my kid is getting that skill from you?
So that's a huge question. And measuring and evaluating executive functioning is something that needs to be discussed more because it's unlike all other testing. So like, for example, as a speech and language pathologist, there's really good tests for articulation that I can give a kid, and I'll be able to tell you exactly what sounds they have trouble with, what part of the word they have trouble with. I can give tests for expressive language, receptive language, all of these things. But executive functioning can really only truly be measured by measuring prompt dependence versus independence. And that's a lot of observations. We have to observe the child in the natural environment. We have to interview the parents. We have to interview the teachers. And they have to fill out lots and lots of checklists. There's never going to be a test, like a standardized test, like an SAT, ACT, or the articulation test or language-based tests that are going to be able to measure executive functioning. Because executive functioning is basically your imagination. It's the visual imagery and the self-talk. That's really what it is. So you really can't measure those things. But, you know, the way I describe it to kids, especially when it comes to visual imagery, is we need their visual imagery to go from like old school 80s, 90s grainy television to 2021 HD TV. We need details, details, details. And we do that by asking reflexive questions. And we ask different types of questions to the student and using declarative language with them to pull out information about what they see. And the more they practice, and it's all about practice and repetition. And the more they practice doing the visual imagery and picturing things and acting it out, the more vivid and more detail-based their visual imagery comes. So I ask lots of questions about, what do you see? Who's there with you? What happens? How do you feel? What did you need? All these different questions about what they about what the visual imagery entails. And parents, you know, can start to say things like, instead of, hey, go do your homework, you can say things like, how will you feel once your homework's done? What does it look like when your homework's done? Instead of saying, go clean your room. What would your room look like once it's clean? How will you feel once it's clean? Or after their, when they pick them up from school, instead of saying, hey, how was your day? Oh, it was fine. It was good. You know, ask, okay, help put in my head what's in your head. Help me visualize your day. What did lunch look like for you? What did recess look like for you? It's all phrasing it in a way that makes sure that they visualize it first and then answer. And we're growing up in this world of instant gratification where everything's instant and everything's right away. It's super important for kids to practice stopping, take some time to process the information, think about it first, and then respond. kids today think they have to answer questions right away, like Google does, or search engines, or whatever, or their cell phone, and everything is instant now. It's important that we teach kids, take all the time you need to think about it, think about the best response, and then answer. And the more we teach them to be okay, internally self-regulated with that comprehension time, the more information we'll get about the visual imagery.
Wow. Wow. What great advice and great insight, and perfect for life skills, right? To take a moment to process what you want to say can keep you out of a lot of trouble with your
friends
and your professionals. So just instead of having a knee-jerk reaction, process what you want to say. And just even, you know, on a job site and in the employment world, and to be able to pause, think about a better way to reframe it, and then say it. And I also love how you're framing your questions to your students or to your clients that parents can also frame it in a way that becomes more visual for the student, so that they can respond in that visual way to help continue to build those skills when they're not directly with you in a session. And coupled with that visual imagery with HGTV is a great way, because I know in the special education world, we always talk about creating visual images when we read, right? And so can you explain how that executive function deficit can make reading more challenging?
Oh yeah. So executive functioning in the past was really looked at as a pure academic skill, something that applied only to school. So for years and years and years, executive functioning was having systems of organization, putting your notebook into folders, organizing your backpack, and it was all external. Everything's external, which is why we have this attention deficit, hyperactivity, kids who can't sit still, inattentiveness, kids who can't focus. But now we know to really look internally. So it's not just academics, it's also home executive functioning and social executive functioning. It really affects all areas of life. When it comes to academics, the two most external academic symptoms of executive dysfunction or ADHD are number one, reading comprehension, and number two, written expression. So part of that diagnostics we were talking about was being able to evaluate executive functioning is you analyze writing samples. You know, have the child create a writing prompt, give them a picture and have them write about it, or have them write about their favorite game or whatever it is based on their age and their grade level, and compare it to other kids their age and their grade level. And you can really gain a lot from their writing. You know, do they understand the perspective of the reader? Is it detail oriented? Is it just really quick? You can really gain a lot from writing. So reading and writing tend to be, English class, language arts, tends to be the least favorite class of ADHD students. And it varies. Sometimes you find some kids who like it. Sometimes it really depends on the teacher. And sometimes you find kids that really don't like math. But those are the two things, because of course, both of those two academic skills really require language. And we know that it has a lot to do with language. And reading comprehension basically is visual imagery, right? So it's visual imagery, and written expression is that times 10. So it starts with visual imagery. It starts with, okay, what do I want to write? And then the writing process is really long and hard, and you have to be regulated the whole time. It's slow, and it takes a long time to transfer the visual imagery down into a fluent story that's appropriate to the reader. So writing is, I work with some of the students that would rather sit there for 2 hours and stare at a blank page than to write something. I would say 95% of my students just hate writing, hate anything, hate having to write stories, those sorts of things. So that's something I deal with all the time as a speech pathologist and someone who works on executive functioning. So reading and writing are two academic skills that require lots of EF. And that's why we see that as the number one external symptom.
And so by working on that visual processing and self-talk, that then helps improve the reading comprehension and the written output. Is that what I'm hearing?
Can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Sure, no problem. So I was saying that by developing the visual imagery and working on growing the internal self-talk, that in turn increases reading comprehension. Is that?
Absolutely. It absolutely trickles down. So a lot of the work in strengthening internal language, nonverbal and verbal working memory, trickles down into academics and trickles down into reading and writing. And a lot of writing programs out there have executive functioning components to it. And when we're teaching kids to read in the elementary and middle school levels, it's super important to teach executive functioning as well and to teach mental movies and not just have kids read and answer multiple choice tests on them. It's super important to figure out what are they visualizing and to teach them the writing process and not just have them write and grade it. It's important to have to teach executive functioning and have these exercises in the classroom. So it definitely trickles down into improvements in the language arts classroom, definitely.
So you have the visual imagery, and then for students, that challenge becomes holding on to that visual component of what they've read to then be able to break it down into smaller segments, kind of like a little TikTok video, to then be able to put a written output, you know, so to organize what they're seeing, to then be able to express that information in a way that is consistent with what their teacher is asking for.
Exactly. So there's so many things. So for the two things, reading comprehension is really hard, but written expression is the hardest because it's everything I said. And number two, it's also following the directions. You know, so many of these kids will create a written story, but it's not what the teacher asked for at all. So, and that's the social side of executive functioning, the perspective taking. So is this what the teacher's asking? Is it answering the main question? Is it fluent to the main idea? There's literally all aspects of executive functioning. You have to self-regulate the entire time and not get so dysregulated that you can't write anything. You have to motivate yourself. You have to evaluate yourself throughout the entire writing process. And you got to use the social as well. You have to be able to understand the situation and have that reciprocity and perspective taking. It really requires just about every executive function in the book to really create a fluent written story.
So what's a one piece, like a one little nugget that you could low kind of hanging fruit that you could share with our audience, as whether it's a parent or a professional, that they could start to infuse in their practice to support their students with the reading and writing component?
One thing that really tends to help students is when they're reading. So reading first, to take breaks every couple of pages, depending on age, maybe every 5 pages, 10 pages, stop and describe what they've read so far verbally to someone else. So read 5 pages and then describe what's in their head to their parent, to their teacher, to their friend. They can record a video on their phone. They can send a voice text, whatever it is, whatever is appropriate for that student, and just have them describe it. And also for writing as well, before they actually start writing, have them describe what they plan on writing out loud first before writing down. So the way that school teaches writing is, okay, here's the writing prompt. Everyone sit quietly at their desk, sit in your super uncomfortable desks for an hour and write and do something. What we really need is give the kids a chance to describe their story out loud first, get up, move around, act it out, feel it out, feel good about it, and then they can write the story. And let them write it on a beanbag chair. Let them write it on a standing desk. Let them, you know, get creative in the classrooms. But anytime you can take a break, remember, it's all about the inhibition. Take a break, figure it out, describe it out loud first, and then come back to it.
Excellent tip. Can you explain the concept of time horizon and how it's linked to motivation? We're going to shift gears a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the time horizon is really how far into the future these students can see. So like I was saying, before, the verbal working memory and the visual imagery system, there's two parts to it. They re-image the relevant past and they forecast into the future. And the ability to forecast into the future is that mental play, that mental dress rehearsal, the ability to look into the future and plan, prioritize, and problem solve. But if they really only have the ability to look a couple of hours into the future, it's going to be really hard for them to plan for the weekend or in the beginning of the school day, say the first period teacher gives them homework. Chances are they're going to forget that book when it's time to pack the backpack to go home. So you really got to start to see how far into the future can they see, can they plan, can they prioritize, and what prompts, reminders, visuals are needed to make sure they're successful beyond their time horizon.
I would think this would also, this planning in the future would help students that are really anxious. so that they could kind of take that pause and to be able to kind of walk through verbally with people or, you know, with an adult to plan, prioritize, and problem solve for the future, I would believe also reduces anxiety as well.
That is a fantastic point. And what a lot of people don't realize about anxiety is most kids with executive functioning have some type of anxiety happening and executive dysfunction. And a lot of that is because they're literally stuck in the present moment. They have a lot of difficulty re-imaging the past and forecasting into the future. So they're stuck in the moment. And then literally out of nowhere, they'll find themselves in an environment that they did not mentally prepare for because they don't have the visual imagery and the self-talk. So they'll find themselves at home and all of a sudden they'll log into their online school program and they'll see that they have hours of homework and all these assignments and all these missing assignments. Or they'll find themselves in a social situation and they didn't mentally prepare for it. So a big part of anxiety is tied to visual imagery. Because with visual imagery, you can do that mental dress rehearsal that I was talking about. So you can pre-experience things in your head. You can do mental play before the situation ever happens. So like if there's some social anxiety, you know, like you're going to a friend's house, you're going to a club after school, instead of just instantly showing up and it was like you teleported there and all of a sudden you get anxious because you didn't prepare for it. If you have the correct visual imagery skills where you can pre-experience it before it happens, when it finally does happen, you feel more prepared for it because you already went through it up here and you came up with a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, scenario A, scenario B. So what happens was already experienced up here and you can play with it, you can feel with it, you can mesh with it. So anxiety is highly tied to executive functioning and a lot of it has to do with the ability to visualize and prepare for things.
And even just asking, you know, what is the worst outcome that could happen, right? For a student that is anxious, I know we're getting off topic, but just kind of asking them, what is the worst thing that could happen so that they could visualize what that could be and then kind of work backwards from there. So let's talk about mindset. Where does a fixed mindset come from?
Yeah, so that's great. So all this work with mindset is from Dr. Carol Dweck and her book, Mindset. It's really a fantastic book. Recommend it to everyone listening. So mindset really comes from lots of different places. Some of it can be from, you know, having executive dysfunction and having an inability to visualize and an inability to talk to yourself. And people with executive dysfunction tend to create these incredibly small little comfort zones. And they tend to stick into those comfort zones. And everything outside of their comfort zone is stupid, boring, scary. They just refuse to do it. And the comfort zone nowadays tends to be the phone, video games, internet, you know, whatever it is that's instant gratification, technology-based. But in after-school club, in after-school sport, going to a friend's house, riding a bike, exercising, listening to a podcast, reading a book, all of these things that kids did before having cell phones and instant gratification now are outside of the comfort zone. And when you stick in that comfort zone day to day to day, you develop a fixed mindset. And parents can help by focusing on their parenting style. Is it more permissive? Is it really child driven where the child really kind of calls the shots and choose what they do on a day to day basis? Is there open access to video games they can access whenever they want? Or is there love and limits? Okay, only an hour a day, 2 hours a day, only after non-preferred tasks are completed. So it's good to analyze parenting styles, whether it's permissive or authoritative. And we know that authoritative parenting is highly successful for executive functioning. So the fixed mindset really comes from a lack of varied experiences and really sticking to that very small and narrow comfort zone.
Can you give us some examples of how, you know, you kind of touched on this, parents and even educators can help break the fixed mindset to move towards more of a growth mindset?
Yep. So we've really come to be conditioned to thinking that everything needs to really be taught with words in sort of that lecture listen model. I feel like lecture, kids hear your words and all of a sudden they're changed and they're inspired and they have new behaviors, you know, but we forget about how important it is for kids to have experiences. So parents need to ask themselves on a day-to-day basis, how many non-screen based experiences does my child have after school. And if parents think about it and they say, you know, outside of YouTube, outside of their phone, outside of, you know, Xbox, PlayStation, Switch, there's really not much. That's really pretty much all he does every day. Yeah, he'll do some homework, but all of his socialization is online. Is he going outside? Is he riding his bike? Is he playing sports? Is he joining clubs? Is he doing art? Is he doing music? It's really about building varied experiences. And yes, your child's going to say, no, I don't want to do that. They're going to put up a fight. You're going to say no. But this whole idea of exposure therapy and letting them know this is an expectation and not a choice, because it's really hard for kids with executive functioning to know what's best for them because they're stuck in the now and because they have such a small time horizon like we talked about. So kids with executive dysfunction, ADHD, really need their parents to be authoritative and let them know, okay, I signed you up for Boy Scouts. I signed you up for the YMCA. I signed you up to do this after school. And that's really, really important for them to have varied experiences because that gets them out of their comfort zone, doing child-led play, not adult-directed play like a lot of social groups out there. It's really important to make sure that they're having varied experiences and they're learning from others and those experiences.
So you mentioned that executive function, obviously the notion of it we've learned and heard more tied to that academic realm, but you did mention the home and social part of it as it relates to executive functioning. So how does executive functioning skills, what does that look like for social skills?
Absolutely. So like I was explaining before, in the past, everyone looked at executive functioning as an academic skill, but now we know that there's social executive functioning and home executive functioning. So home executive functioning is really the ability to self-regulate in the home, complete non-preferred tasks, not get angry at your parents and use all of these, you know, bag of tricks to manipulate them, those sorts of things. But social executive functioning is really situational awareness, the ability to read the field and read the room, stand back, enter a new environment and observe. What's everybody else doing? How can I do what they're doing? How can I acclimate into this environment appropriately? Social perspective taking. So we know that self-evaluation and the ability to think about your own thinking is an executive functioning trait. And it's even more difficult for kids to think about others' thinking. So what kinds of thoughts am I putting into others' heads? Am I putting positive thoughts into their heads? Am I making them feel comfortable? Am I making them feel uncomfortable? Am I making them want to be around me with my actions, with my words, with my bodies, with my behavior? So social reciprocity and making the relationships 50-50. Social relatedness, the ability to relate to others more intimately. Kids with executive functioning tend to have those small comfort zones, so they only really want to talk about the things in their comfort zone. Can you also talk about something that interests someone else? Can you relate to someone else at an intimate level? Are all their relationships online or are they real in-person long-term relationships? There's a massive social aspect to executive functioning.
How do we teach that?
Yep. So just like I was saying,
hard one, right?
just like I was saying before, it's very much experience-based. So before I ever bring a child into a hangout group. So I don't do social groups because social groups are adult led and they're very structured. Kids learn from unstructured hangout groups. Before I bring a child into a hangout group, I work with them one-on-one. We build the visual imagery, build the self-talk. We build that inhibition processing time, stop and think time. And it's important for them to think about others' thinking. Like when they're with other kids, they need to pause and think, okay, I just said that. How did they interpret that? How did that make that person feel? So as long as that child's having constant inner dialogue when they're with peers and they're analyzing the situation, they're coaching themselves through it, they're wondering and they're thinking about others thinking. You know, kids with poor executive functioning never think about their peers thinking. They just are focused on themselves and are they having fun? And it's important to ask, okay, are they having fun? Are they comfortable? So having that inner dialogue is huge for social EF.
And have you found that to be helpful in terms of guiding the kiddo, you know, one-on-one and then putting them in a hangout group, which I love, to setting up kind of this opportunity for them to practice these skills without direction from an adult? And then do you kind of circle back with them to say, hey, when you said this to so-and-so, this is what their face looked like. Did you notice that?
Absolutely. So that's a great point. So I always meet with the student first. to work on their individualized goals if they have social executive functioning goals. So meet with them first to work on that, have them experience and have them try what we worked on in the one-on-one setting, have them test it out, observe them, stand back, don't interfere, allow them to hang out, allow them to be themselves. And then once we're back in the one-on-one setting, break it down and help them visualize what happened, help them to re-image what happened and break it down for them. Okay, next time we try this, next time we try that, we keep that in mind that time. So filling in the one-on-one time with the social time is super important because they need that external coach before they have the internal self-cue. So executive functions are all about reliant on the external, and the goal is to make everything internal. So I'm acting as their executive functioning, I'm acting as their coach, while the whole time we're teaching them to be their own coach.
So kind of just shift a little bit from that, what strategies can parents or teachers use to help kiddos build resilience? And what is the greater goal of resilience?
So a lot of people think of resilience and they think of, you know, someone who's able to get through bullying or this really difficult experience. Today, nowadays, resilience is just as basic as being able to persevere through boredom, persevere through, you know, standing in line at the grocery store with your parents and not taking your phone out, being able to get through gym class, being able to get through, you know, a math class or a writing assignment, things like that. It's super important to, you know, resilience at first. Kids with executive dysfunction are going to be very reliant on adults to act as their executive functioning, to provide the prompts, to provide the scaffolding. And we as adults always have to be aware of fading prompts. And this is really important for IEPs. Sometimes IEPs can be too accommodating and 504s can be too accommodating, and it's never focusing on transition to independence. So we always have to think about fading prompts towards independence. So sometimes we have to allow kids to struggle. Sometimes we have to allow kids to not get the highest of grades without emailing the teachers and having them retake it or the ability to, you know, have extended time, those sorts of things. We need to hold kids to deadlines. We need to allow them to observe their work and try better next time and take that poor grade. So it's super important to act as their executive functioning at first, but fade back when necessary so that the responsibility and the accountability is on them to build the independent skills. Because if we act as their executive functioning all up until 12th grade graduation, they're going to have a real hard time at college where there is no IEPs.
Well, and also to have that reflective thinking part added in there, right? So they don't get the grade that they were looking for or the response that they were looking for from their friend, but to provide that space for reflective of what could we have done differently? What would have that looked like if we tried this to help them grow? And, you know, and you talk about with the IEP cycle, you know, we're thinking year to year. And that's why I always, through IEP coaching, explain to my parents when they do their parent input statement, think, you know, where do you see your kid in 1 year? Where do you see them in three? Where do you see them in five? So they can start to have that forward thinking that you're talking about to then look at what can we do with goals and accommodations so that they can be successful. I mean, that's the heart of an IEP, right? For successful future independence and employment so that they can be on their own and be self-driven. So to kind of cut back on these fading prompts and to be able to independently employ this.
Sometimes we've been conditioned to focus a little too much on grades and focus a little too much on academics. I can't tell you how many students I've worked with, and they reach out to me in college because things fall apart in college. But in high school, they had a 4.0. They were advanced placement. They were honors. They aced the SATs. So their ability to take in information, regurgitate it onto a test, get a good grade and move on to the next test is great, but are they resilient? Can they self-regulate? Can they manage their time? You know, are they going to their college classes and then coming right back to the dorm and just playing video games for the next hour because there's no adults there to tell them what to do? So we really need to have more of a focus on executive functioning skills, because executive functioning skills are a greater predictor of success than IQ. IQ is only going to take you so far. And these kids with low EF tend to have very, very high IQs. I can't tell you how many AP kids, honors kids, kids with incredible language, kids with, you know, just super smart kids I work with, But that's really, you know, that's part of the standardized testing, no child left behind, race to the top, test. That's what it's all about. But we got to start thinking about executive functioning skills and building resilience, more project-based learning, more hands-on learning, maybe get some internships at the high school level, community relationships with schools. We have to get kids trying things out, more field trips, more experience. You know, all of high school can't be lecture, listen. There has to be more focus on group work, project-based work, and really getting hands-on learning.
Preach. Preach on that one. What is one of the greatest misconceptions about executive functioning and speech language skills/abilities?
That's my favorite question of the day right there. So there's right now, there's so many great speech and language pathologists out there that are specializing in executive functioning. And I love it. I love seeing these speech pathologists becoming leaders in the executive functioning field. And the vast majority of people seem like hear speech and language pathologist, and they think, oh, you just work on articulation. You work on stuttering. You work on speech. Like what's going on there? But people don't look at the full title of speech and language pathologist. Speech is just that. Speech is your intelligibility. And how easily are you understood to the listener? But language is really what makes our scope of practice huge. There's expressive language, how you express yourself, receptive language, how you take in language, social pragmatic language, reading language, writing language, literacy-based language, and this internal language of executive functioning, which is sort of new to the research, is language-based, which is what we really have an intense master's level degree training in. The misconception is that we are very small and that we work on speech and stuttering and articulation and things like that. But our ability to work on cognition, to work on social, to work on resiliency is really understated. And, you know, language and communication is everything. It's what makes the world go around. Without that, there's nothing. You know, SLPs, you know, being a leader on a team with occupational therapists, with physical therapists, with psychotherapists. Everything is always team-based, multidisciplinary-based. But SLPs really having a lot more to say at the table is something I'm very passionate about.
So with that, what should parents ask when looking for an SLP? Because we all, in our own practices, we all start to kind of create a niche in what we're doing. And so what would a parent ask if they're really looking for somebody with your training with that executive function support for their child? How do they go about searching for one that would be a good fit for them and their needs?
Yep, that's a great question as well. So overall, it's very important to look at what the speech pathologist specializes in. That's super important. So one of the downfalls of our scope of practice being so huge is that SLPs specialize in so many different things. You have SLPs that specialize in speech and articulation and apraxia. You really want to look for someone that is affiliated with the executive functioning ADHD community and has gone beyond their master's level training to learn about executive functioning. So I've conducted my own research. I've worked with doctors, psychotherapists, nonprofit groups. I've traveled internationally working with different groups and my local CHADD group, C-H-A-D-D, Children and Adults with ADD. So working with all these great groups has helped me to become someone who specializes in executive functioning. That executive function specialist title is basically something I gave myself. I never got a certificate in the mail saying, you're a specialist now. It's just something that I did by doing research. But it's really, I'm a speech pathologist specializing in executive functioning. And that's really what it is you want to find someone who's gone beyond their master's level training and hopefully has been within the field for quite a few years and has gone beyond their training to learn more about what executive functioning is and how it's connected to language.
We've kind of gone over the gamut of executive function. Let's just spend a little bit of time, if it's all right with you, to talk about what age should children be exhibiting self-regulation? And then what does successful self-regulation look like at different age levels?
So that's really important. So self-regulation is really the core deficit of executive functioning. And what's important to remember is the executive functioning, the frontal lobe, the brain grows from back to front. So the front of the brain is the last to develop, which is the frontal lobe, the hub of executive functioning. So overall, there's going to be some self-regulation issues up until, you know, 25, 26 years old. It's totally normal for young kids to break down and scream and cry when things don't go their way. You know, it's a, when they lose their Pokemon cards or they lose a game or something happens. You know, it's a, kids learn through trial and error and experience. It's really only a concern when it's a chronic issue and it's happening day after day after day, and it's really creating toxic stress to the others around them. Teenagers have mental breakdowns. Teenagers push for independence and fight with their parents. So there's always typical levels of dysregulation with even, you know, the, some of the strongest executive functioning in teenagers. But you really want to look at how often is it happening? Does this child seem to have the correct independence levels? And you have to ask again, how many varied experiences does this child have on a daily basis? Parents should start to think, where am I providing the most prompts? Where am I providing the most reminders? And that's really their way of seeing where am I being their executive functioning and where are they building independence? So dysregulation is normal up until young adulthood in certain ways, but start to take note of what's causing the dysregulation, how often is it happening, and really where are they independent and where are they not?
What tips and suggestions would you have kind of wrapping this up, our conversation, for parents or caregivers or teachers that are working closely and supporting students that either have or have not been identified with ADHD and executive function and they're seeing this language impact?
Yeah. So really start to think about those three zones of executive functioning. So think about academic executive functioning, how many late assignments, what's going on with homework, you know, how are things happening in classes? Start to focus a little bit on literacy, language arts, reading and writing. Is that really a struggle for them? Look at home executive functioning. Is there a lot of dysregulation in the home? And look at social. Are all of their relationships online? Are they coming home and isolating every day after school? It's really important to really look at these areas and start to see, okay, are they creating small little comfort zones? Is there a pattern of a specific behavior? And if there is, contact the school. Look to see if you can get an evaluation, if you can get a 504, if you can get an IEP, if you can get the services needed to help them. Because, you know, like I said before, IEPs and 504s can sometimes hurt the child if they're too accommodating, but they're super important, you know, especially in those younger years. You know, education needs to be tailored towards the unique individual. And if there are brain differences, if they are neurodivergent, it's important not to take a one-size-fits-all approach and allow kids to access education their own unique way. That's super important. So having an IEP, having a 504 can be incredibly empowering and helpful to a child. So look into that. Have conversations with the schools, with the teachers to see if it could be helpful. Reach out to the local CHAD groups. CHAD is an incredibly helpful group that has great parent resources, and do lots of reading. You know, look into the work of Dr. Russell Barkley, Sarah Ward, Ryan Wexelblatt, the ADHD dude, George McCloskey. There's so many great people out there that have unbelievable resources on YouTube, on Google. So look into it and start to connect the dots on, okay, is this typical for their age? Is this, you know, something I'm just concerning myself with? Or is it, or could this be a picture of a larger issue? So you definitely want to do your research, read a few books, read a few articles, read some research, and reach out to local professionals.
You know, starting our podcast, the IEP Essentials podcast, I really wanted to provide this space for families and professionals to be able to access really in-depth practitioners such as yourself so that they can hear and grow and learn and hopefully be able to support either their personal kiddos or the kiddos that they do work with. So at the end of this, at the end of listening to this podcast, what do you want them to know, feel, and or do? What's like your little takeaway?
For parents?
Parents or professionals, yes.
Yeah. So the number one thing is you want to immerse yourself in the most recent research on executive functioning. ADHD is quite possibly one of the most misunderstood psychiatric disorders, or whatever you want to call it. It's so misunderstood. So it's important to look at the most recent research. The Harvard Center of the Developing Child has great research. look into Dr. Russell Barkley, Ryan Wexelblatt, Sarah Ward, look into the pioneers in the field, and look at what they're saying and what the most recent research is saying. And, you know, now we fully know that ADHD is a disorder of executive functioning. And there's certainly other disorders that have executive functioning challenges, but ADHD is a disorder of executive functioning. So immerse yourself in the most recent research, in all the great stuff that's out there. And you know, if you're a parent, you know, the most important thing you can do is really take a step back and analyze what your child is doing on a daily basis. How are you acting as their executive functioning? Where are you giving prompts? Is it getting them out the door in the morning? Is it hygienic tasks? Is it getting homework done? Is it going out and working with friends? Is it getting off of the games? Where are you giving the most prompts, and where are they most independent, and where are they most prompt dependent? That's how we measure executive functioning. How reliant are they on adults to get through the day to day?
I always end our podcast with this same question. So if you could have a billboard with one tip for parents, what would it be and why?
Wow, that's a great one. So I would probably just write in big words, interpersonal relationships and varied experiences. That is the lost art. So my great friend, Carrie Ebert, who I do my monthly online book club with, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Instagram, Carrie Ebert Seminars. So we read a book and we do a chapter every week. She had this great post about just play has disappeared. And play is just something you really don't see anymore. Like every time I'm outside, I don't see kids playing. I don't see kids riding bikes as much as I used to. And play is so important. And executive functioning is mental play. We talk about things going from external to internal. It's the same thing. Play is the most important thing for kids to do when they're young. They do manual play with toys, and then it goes internal. And internal play is planning, prioritizing, and problem solving. So play never stops. Whether you're 5 or 50, you've got to play. And if you are stuck on screens all day, if you're stuck in your comfort zone all day, you're not going to develop the skills. I don't care if you have straight A's. I don't care if you have a 4.0. I don't care if you never miss any homework. I don't care what academics are. If you don't have executive function skills, you're going to have a hard time in college, career, and life. And we build executive functions through experience and through relationships, doing more things, doing more diverse things, and meeting more diverse people. So it's so important that parents don't just focus only on grades, testing, homework, grades, testing, homework. You know, we have enough of this Kumon and Baby Einstein and all this stuff going on. It's so important for kids to get out there, try new things, do things they don't want to do, because every time once they build the habit to doing it, they feel great about themselves, they build a new skill, and they end up thanking you for it.
Mike, this was such a pleasure and a wealth of information and tips that I know folks are really going to just fervently need to sit and write and take notes and hear it again. So I absolutely appreciate your time and your nuggets of information. Where can people find you?
Sure. So my website is grownowtherapy.com. On Instagram, Facebook, grownowtherapy. So grownowtherapy.com has all my information. My email's on there. Instagram, Grow Now Therapy. You can shoot me a DM if you listen to the podcast and you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, I would love to hear from you guys. I love interacting with parents and people from around the country and around the world. So definitely check out my website, grownowtherapy.com. And Instagram is where I am most of the time, at Grow Now Therapy. So definitely reach out and shoot me a message.
Thank you so, so much. And if you are new listening to our podcast, give us a follow. And if you need anything from me, find me over on Instagram at Learning Essentials. Thank you so much for our conversation today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you for joining us today for our IEP Essentials Pro Tips podcast. To hear more pro tips and find additional IEP Essentials, including our IEP webinar, please visit www.learningessentialsedu.com.